The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 4, text number 36. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasatikari. Recorded on October 28th, 2011, in Vrindavan, India.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Api
Chet
Asi
Papebhya
Sarvebhya Papakritamaha Jnana Plavena Eva Vijinam Santarishyasi Api Chedasi Papebhya Sarvebhya Papakritamaha Savangana Plavena Eva Vijinang Santarishyasi Api Chedasi Papebhya Sarvebhya Papakritamaha Savangana Planeva Vijinang Santarishyasi Api Even Chait if Asi you are Papebhya of sinners Sarvebhya of all Papakritamaha the greatest sinner Sarvam all such sinful reactions Jnana Plavena by the boat of transcendental knowledge Eva certainly Vijinam the ocean of miseries Santarishyasi
you will cross completely
translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners when you were situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. Purport. Proper understanding of one's constitutional position in relationship to Krishna is so nice that it can once lift one from the struggle for existence which goes on in the ocean of nescience. This material world is sometimes regarded as an ocean of nescience and sometimes as a blazing forest. In the ocean, however expert a swimmer one may be, the struggle for existence is very severe. If someone comes forward and lifts the struggling swimmer from the ocean, he is the greatest savior. Perfect knowledge received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the path of liberation. The boat of Krishna consciousness is very simple, but at the same time, the most sublime. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jatapada Kamalam Shri Guru and Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Dalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Well, this is encouraging, isn't it? Consider how sinful we are, there's hope that even the most sinful of all sinners, what is the Sanskrit? The greatest sinner, papakritamaha. Sarvebhya papakritamaha, the most sinful of all sinners, you see. Even if you're the ultimate sinner, there's no sinner more abominable, more wretched than you. If you can situate yourself in the boat of transcendental knowledge, so that means you don't have to do anything. You just have to know that Krishna is God. That's sufficient. You don't have to surrender. You just have to know that Krishna is God. What does it mean to situate yourself in the boat of transcendental knowledge? This is further elaborated in chapter 4, text number 38. Nahi jnanena sadrisham pavitram iha vidyate tatsvayam yogasang sada kalinatmani vindati. In this world, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And when one becomes mature in the practice of devotional service, he relishes this knowledge within himself in due course of time. So from this verse we understand, to really become absorbed in the knowledge, you have to be absorbed in devotional service. In other words, devotional service, knowledge without devotional service is simply dry. It's not going to liberate you. If you know Krishna as God, you don't surrender to him, then what is the advantage of your knowledge? You see? Prabhupada told me, he said that knowledge without practice becomes dry and useless. It's called jnana. But when you put the knowledge into practice, it becomes realized. You can know that Krishna is God. Okay, Krishna is God. But to realize that Krishna is God means you see Krishna everywhere. You see everything within Krishna and Krishna within everything. Now you're realizing that Krishna is God. So to be situated, there's one thing is to have some knowledge, but to be situated in the boat of knowledge, you see, that actually is vigyam. You can't cross the ocean of material miseries simply if you have knowledge but you don't apply the knowledge. That's the point. You have to put this knowledge into practice. Otherwise your knowledge, it become dry for you after a while. We had one boy from Lanka. He was coming to our center in Austin. He was very fired up to read the Bhagavatam. He bought a set of Bhagavatams. He was really excited. Every day, every week, whenever he came, he would tell us, oh, I'm reading this, I'm reading that. He was so excited about it. He said, why don't you chant some japa? Oh, no, I'm just going to read. I don't want to chant. Well, about halfway through the Bhagavatam, he lost his sting. And that was it, you see. Because he didn't want to put it into practice. He didn't want to chant. Knowledge without application loses its taste. In the beginning, it's very stimulating. But after a while, it loses its taste. There's a certain passion. That means that the knowledge without application is actually rajasic. There's a tinge of passion there that, oh yes, now I'm becoming greatly learned in the Vedas. I'm becoming very learned, you see. I know this, I know that. I know so many things. I know this, I know that. I know. You see. One can be proud of knowing this and knowing that, knowing so many things. But if you're not actually applying it, if you're not becoming a humble devotee, then you're not really situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge. You may be seeing the boat of transcendental knowledge, but you're not situated in it. See, there's a difference. So one then has to situate himself in that boat of knowledge by practical application. And then he will surely receive the great benefit of that knowledge. It's interesting here, there's two similes. There's different similes used. Sometimes the material world is considered to an ocean, sometimes a blazing fire, forest fire. So one should not be confused by thinking, well, I thought it was like a blazing forest fire. Now it's saying it's an ocean. How can both of them be true? I mean, is it? They're certainly not the same thing. An ocean and a forest fire are different. So how the material world could be like an ocean and also be like a blazing forest fire. But it is. You have to... These are analogies to help us understand the nature of this material existence. One shouldn't allow the mundane, doubting mind to get in the way of appreciating the beauty of the Vedic wisdom. Both similes are equally good. You can use either one. Of course, one could say, well, the water from the ocean that puts out the blazing forest fire. So how does that work? Well, every analogy has its... Prabhupada says crude analogy. Every analogy has its breaking point. There's no analogy that's perfect. The good analogy is the ones that have the most points that match the philosophical principle. But no analogy is perfect. Prabhupada compares it to just like there's some star out in the sky, and there's thousands of stars in the sky, and I'm trying to point out to you one particular star out there. Well, how will I help you to see which one I'm talking about? Oh, see that one over there? Well, then I see about 500 stars over there where you're pointing. So which one is it? Well, I'll say, well, see this branch on the tree? Now, just situate yourself already. Now, take your eye up the trunk, and now I go on this branch and see that twig out there, that little twig right out there, and see the star that's just beyond that twig. That's the one I'm talking about, you see. So is that twig the star? No. But does it help you see the star? Yes. So the analogies help you to see the thing, but they're not the actual thing. They just help you to grasp it. They are tools to help you, intellectual tools to help you grasp the principle. So you shouldn't think that these analogies are contradictory, therefore there's something wrong with this wisdom. No. It's two different ways. I could say, you could look out this branch here and see the star. I could say, well, come over here and look on this tree and look on this branch and see that star. Either way, it's correct. Either way, it's not the actual star. It's something that helps you see the star. So whether you say the material world is an ocean or a blazing forest fire, either way can help you to understand the nature of this material existence. Either one is devastating for someone who is trapped in it. If you're trapped in a blazing forest fire, it's a very precarious situation. If you're out in the middle of the ocean, you're on a ship and some pirates came and they threw you overboard, it's hopeless. You're going to die. There's no way. Even if there's no sharks, you're just going to die. You won't be able to last very long. Just imagine you're 5,000 miles out in the middle of the ocean and somebody throws you overboard. It's hopeless. Unless somebody rescues you, you're finished. You're going to drown. And very shortly, very quickly, you'll be dead, you see. Same thing with the forest fire. There's a forest fire all around. You'll be burned to death by the forest fire. So the material world is compared to an ocean and a blazing forest fire. Both are very good analogies. In this particular verse, the analogy of the ocean is very good, and because then the boat is there to save you. In a forest fire, they have special things you can crawl inside. You can carry with you into the woods. If you're camping in the woods, you can carry. They make special things out of that you can crawl inside. The forest fire comes. You crawl and get inside the thing, and the forest fire can come over you and won't be killed. It reflects the heat away. Even if it comes right over you, you won't be killed. So if you have one of those special fire thing to protect you from the fire, or you have a boat, in either case, you can be saved. And of course, this brings to mind that wonderful, wonderful shloka, which defeats Shakespeare by a million times over. Samashritaye palapallavaplavam mahatpadam punjachashomarare bhavambadir vatsa parang parang padam 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 yadva padam nate sham. I just love that verse. It's so nice. Samashritaye palapallavaplavam mahat padang punya jasho marare bhavam badir vatsa parang param padam 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 yadva padam nate sham. Isn't that sweet? It's really sweet. For So those who take shelter of the boat of the lotus feet of Lord Sri Krishna, which are the shelter of the cosmic manifestation. The lotus feet of Krishna, who is the shelter of the cosmic manifestation, and who is famous for annihilating that rascal named Mudra. This vast, insurmountable, uncrossable, unswimmable, crossable, if we can coin a term here, ocean of material existence becomes reduced down the amount of water in the footprint of a calf, vatsapadam. The aim of those persons is the Vaikuntha realm, parampadam. Vaikuntha is also called parampadam. Their aim is that Vaikuntha realm, parampadam. Not that place, padam padam yadva padam date sham. Not that place where there is danger at every step. This place is very dangerous. You're walking down the street, all of a sudden, boom, you're dead. Okay. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the day they were opening their first center in Calcutta, the very first day they would go to open a new center, he was walking under some roof and the thing collapsed. It just missed him by virtually inches. If he had been one inch more the other way, he'd have been killed. This thing just came kwam. He walked out, he just barely missed him. That's how dangerous it is, you see. Bhakti Siddhanta says, but he took it. He was almost killed. On the day they were opening their temple. So you never know. It's very, very dangerous. Automobile accidents now. Everyone's killed. Every day somebody gets killed. So many people are mangled and brutally, grotesquely injured in the highways every day all over the world. What to speak of murders and, heart attacks. It's just a very dangerous place. You never know when you're going to be finished, when your body's going to be wiped out. Therefore, you have to always take shelter of Krishna at every minute. Don't think you're going to live forever. Well, I'm young now. Is it? I have my life insurance. I have my wife. I have my kid. No way I can die now. I'm protected. My family members protect me from Yamaraj. I have no problem, you see. My beloved wife, my beloved husband, they will make sure that Yamaraj won't touch me. It doesn't work that way. Ahani ahani bhutani ganchantiya layamalayam shesha mishtar, what is it? Ahani ahani bhutani
sheshastava.
Ahani ahani bhutani
sheshastava. Sheshastava. Stava? Think those who are remaining?
Ahani ahani bhutani.
Ichami.
I'm forgetting.
Ichami.
I'm forgetting. Ahani ahani bhutani kantanchi alayamalayam shesha shtavara mishtami kim mashtaryamatahapadam. At every moment, countless numbers of living entities are being dragged to the court of Yamaraj. For those who are remaining here, they are thinking, not me. I'm going to live for a long time, folks. Not me. Death cannot take me. I have many plans, you see. I mean, he planned, just like Stephen Jobs, he had big, big plans for the, iPhone line, expanding. Even he was inventing, working on a new iPhone, working on new gadgets as he died. At the last minute, he kept working on new gadgets. But he was finished, you see. So, no matter who you are, no matter how famous you may be, how rich, how powerful, how much you're surrounded by loving family members. Sorry, at any minute you can be taken away from this place. And according to your karma, you go to a new destination. So those who are intelligent, they say, I'm tired of being pulled along this conveyor belt of the material energy with no control over my future, just being helplessly dragged through the cycle of birth and death, the 8,400,000 species. I'm tired of this. I want out of this karma chakra. Therefore, I'm going to surrender to Krishna. That is not karmic. Some people say, well, when Krishna wants me to, I will surrender. That's ridiculous. Krishna wants you to surrender right now, rascal. So why you don't do it? Don't give me this nonsense. When Krishna wants, then I will surrender. Krishna wants right now. What's the proof? Sarvadaman paritya ja mame kangshiranang vija ahang tvang sarvapapi bhyo mokshi shami mashucha. So Krishna wants to. Why are you not doing it? Why are you not obeying Krishna? You see? Why, you think you're Krishna? They do that. They tell me that man in Delhi airport, he said, we're all Krishna here. You see, everyone...
There is one Krishna sitting under the tree here.
Huh?
There is one Krishna sits under the tree here. On the outside.
Is there Krishna outside in the alley? He come beggar on the street? Dharidra and Narayan?
No, he's sitting under the tree playing the flute.
Does he have a begging bowl?
No.
No? He's just showing everyone he's Krishna? Are all the gopis coming by the sound of his flute? Are the gopis coming by the sound of his flute? Any gopi girls coming? Any beautiful gopi girls coming?
Huh?
The cows are coming to eat his
flute. No, there were a couple of cows there and he was playing the flute.
Some cows came. That means he's Krishna because they attracted the cow.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought he was going to give him something to eat.
No.
Well, if he can lift Govardhan Hill, then we'll tell you that he's Krishna. Anybody can dress up with a peacock feather in their hair and blow on a flute. Mm-hmm. You see. But if he can lift Govardhan Hill, then we'll take that he's Krishna. Yeah.
It's quite different way he's decorated himself and he sits there.
Huh?
It's quite a way he is decorating himself and sitting there playing the flute.
Yeah, Prabhupada said India is a mystic factory. Every day they're manufacturing another incarnation of Krishna. There was one back in the 60s, Meher Baba was his name. He wouldn't talk, he was mana, but he would sometimes say nonsense things. He'd write on a chalkboard. He showed that he was, a spiritualist by not speaking, but he'd write on a chalkboard all nonsense. He said, I am Rama, I am Krishna, I am the Ancient One. And everyone was, oh, he's God. All the hippies, not all of them. Some of the hippies were wild about him. He had a big following at one time back in the late 60s. In Berkeley, California, he had so many followers, they started a vegetarian restaurant. The Meher Baba followers had their own vegetarian restaurant. You know, we had vegetarian food for the Meher Baba people. So when I was with Prabhupada in 1975 in Atlanta, there was one of his followers came to the temple for the Sunday feast, and there was a question and answer session, and there used to be a popular poster that said, who is Meher Baba? That was the poster. It was always around. Who is Meher Baba? You know, then you're supposed to know, oh yeah, he's Rama and Krishna. He's the Ancient One. So there's all these posters. Who is Meher Baba? So this follower or fan of Meher Baba, he asked Prabhupada, who is Meher Baba? And Prabhupada said, there's so many bogus Babas. Just find out who is Krishna. And the boy surrendered and became a disciple, Paramparadas. It was so nice, he actually surrendered to Prabhupada and became a disciple after then. That's the potency of the pure devotee, you see. He asked a stupid question, but Prabhupada gave him a very powerful answer. There's so many bogus Babas. Just find out who is Krishna, that is sufficient. And he did it, you know. So there's so many bogus. When I was in Austin, back in about 67, when Swami Satchidananda came, he said, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. That's what he told us. I went to his lecture, Swami Satchidananda. I'm God, you're God, we're all God. This is all bogus, you see. Simply bogus. There was another popular guru I went to. This was in 1970 in California. He used to hold weekly programs at a place called the Family Dog. Our devotees are going to The devotees had held an event there also in the same auditorium. It's called the Family Dog Auditorium on the Pacific Ocean in San Francisco. There's some pictures of Prabhupada sitting there. They had the end of the Ratha Yatra. They went inside the Family Dog Auditorium, had a big program there. Some famous pictures of Prabhupada. So we went to the same auditorium, and there was a bogus guru. His name was Steve Gaskin. And he would start off the program blowing on a buffalo horn. And everybody, but he would blow on his buffalo horn, and everybody would go, Om. That's heavy a kirtan. Everybody would chant Om all together, like, you know, 150 hippies all sitting there going together, Om. The room would just be, Om. This so-called guru, he smoked marijuana, he took LSD and all this kind of stuff. So the hippies thought he was really cool. Because he took smoked marijuana, he took LSD, and he talked about self-realization. And everyone thought he was a self-realized guru, you see. So he said that we're all avatars. I personally asked a question, and he said, we are all avatars. So this is the kind of bogus nonsense that's going around, you see. Everybody's God, you see. I am God, you're God, we're all God. There was a book I read when I was a spiritual seeker back in 68. My first attempt to understand Indian philosophy, you see, to become self-realized. The Christian background didn't give me the mystical world that I was interested in entering into. It was so dry. It was just, you know, be moral and that was about it. But this whole mystical idea of having, you know, meditational, going deep into meditation and having transcendental realization, it was a whole exciting new thing. So I was trying to find out how to do it, and I got one book called The Book. And the author's name is Alan Watts. He said, actually, you are God. But right now you're playing hide-and-go-seek with yourself. So now you just come out of hiding and be God. All you have to do.
Millions and millions of copies were sold.
It's a very popular book.
Still
being selling big. You can go on Amazon.com and look for The Book by Alan Watts.
You are telling them to go look for that book.
No, they're not going to buy the book. It's just out of curiosity if they want to see things. It's still selling in big numbers. It's even though he's dead and gone. But I tried it for a few days, and it's wow, it's pretty good. I'm actually God, you know. I tried being God for a while, but after a few days, things didn't work out exactly as I wanted them to, and it really, you know, didn't make any sense. There's the idea that I can actually just have to realize that I'm God. Wow. But then, you know, God means everything goes the way you want it to go. That's if you're really God, you're in control of everything. But then, obviously, it becomes obvious after a few days, a little bubble pops, and you realize it's just nonsense. So how do I become self-realized? The original teachers that I studied under, they were all telling me that I'm God, you see. And you become self-realized, you have to become God again. So that's a pretty difficult thing, to become God. If self-realization means you have to become God, then it's hopeless. You see, I'm God. If I'm God, I don't like those firecrackers going off. So why do they keep going off? You see, if I'm God, they would stop immediately because I want them to stop. So, it's obviously I'm not God. Oh. If I'm God, the microphone wouldn't be falling down either. So. This proves that I'm not God. The microphone's slipping down away from my mouth. So, are there any questions? Yeah.
We hear this, like Yudhishthira Maharaj says this verse that all people are going to the abode of Yamaraj, yet those who are remaining, they are not realizing. The point is how we are going to realize it actually, that yes, actually we chant and but still we keep on, means somewhere back we keep on feeling that okay, we still have some time here. So how we are actually going to realize, yes, that anytime death may come.
You don't realize it? Do you mean to tell me you do not realize it? Is that what you're saying?
I mean just that...
You can't understand that point?
I understand it, but...
Why do you think you're immune to death? Tell me, why do you think you're immune to death? What makes you think you're immune to them? It's happening all around you. You think you're any different than anybody else? What makes you think you're immune to death? And that's astounding that you could think you're immune to death. How can you possibly think that you're immune to death? That it can't come at any minute and take you?
He didn't say that immune to death, but he is like, not forgetting, but he's saying that I still feel that I have some time.
Huh?
He feels that I still have some time.
What? That's astounding. How you could think that death cannot come at any minute? I mean, what makes you think this? Do you think there's some protective shield holding off death? The Yamaraj has been... you're in a special Yamaraj-free zone where Yamaraj can't touch. You have some special boon, you know, that a Yamaraj can't take you at least for the next 5 years. You know, you have some special benediction? No, I'm asking him. What makes you think that you're immune to death, that you can't die in any minute? I don't understand. Explain to me why you think you're going to die in any minute.
Usually, like, there are some symptoms, like, say, people have some disease or they are older, then they are going to die.
You already have a disease. Did you know you have a disease already? It's called a material body. Right now you're suffering by a disease called a material body. Your material body is itself a disease. It's a disease of the soul. When the soul becomes diseased, it gets a material body. This material body you have is a symptom of the disease. You have a diseased soul right now. You have a sick soul. That's why you have a body. Just like when you get sick, you get a stuffy nose. When the soul becomes sick, it gets a material body. This material body is a symptom of your spiritual disease that you have right now. Did you know that? It is. No. This proves that you're a rascal. You have a material body. You're a selfish, demoniac rascal. The material body you have proves it. Just like if somebody, you ever seen the prisoners out working on the side of the road? They have their prison uniforms on. The striped suits, you've seen them. So you know he's a prisoner. But you have a prison uniform on right now. This material body is a prison uniform. This proves that you're a prisoner, you're a criminal. You violated the laws of God, that's why you have a material body. Did you know that? That you're a criminal?
Is there anybody we see who has a spiritual body in this material one?
Huh?
Do we see anybody who has a spiritual body in this material world?
Everyone has a spiritual body, but it's covered.
Yeah. Without the covering.
Yes, Prabhupada, well, even the pure devotees take on a material body when they're here to be one with us. But of course, when Krishna comes, his body is fully spiritual. His body is completely spiritual, never gets sick, never gets old, never dies. So this, according to karma, your body can die. According to karma, your body can die at any minute. Just like there's a counter going on right now. Just like they have these countdowns for launching the spacecraft in 10, 9, 8, 7, 6. It goes on for many days. They have a countdown that goes on for many days. It finally hits zero and liftoff, you see. So you have a counter going on right now. Your death is already determined by the laws of karma. There's a countdown already happening right now. You're just counting down to death right now. You're in the process of dying right now.
It goes by the opposite direction, isn't it? It starts with...
He's dying right now.
Two, three...
Countdown to zero.
1 year, 2 years...
Either way, you can see either way it's the same principle. So, right now there's a counter going off, and when you hit a certain number, that's it, you're out of here. This body's finished. According to the laws of karma, an expert astrologer can actually predict when you're going to die. It's already decided by the laws of karma when you're going to die. But if you surrender to Krishna, then he can change it. If you're under the spiritual energy of Krishna, then your death is completely in his hand. He can take you immediately if he needs you in another world to do service there. He wants to transfer to a different planet to do service there. He may have a mission for you on a different planet. Or he can, if he has a mission here, he can keep you here for hundreds of years. It's like Vivaman Kankur, he lived for hundreds of years in Vrindavan. See, he was also called Suradas. He lived for hundreds of years here in Vrindavan. His body never died, and Krishna kept him here, even though his body was hundreds of years old. He never died. So it's up to Krishna. For a devotee, he puts himself completely in Krishna's hand. I can die immediately, that's okay. I'm willing to die right now, my Lord. You tell me right now I'm ready. Or, you want me to stay here for 5,000 years? I don't care. There are some Vedic kings right now who are alive here in India somewhere, in hiding. One king from the Chandra dynasty and the other from the Surya dynasty. They're actually right now living here in India in a hidden place. And they have remained here throughout the duration of the entire Kali Yuga. We're talking 432,000 years these kings will live. And when Kalki Avatar comes and kills off all the rascals, these two kings will revive the Surya and Chandra dynasties. They're living right now, here in India somewhere. These two kings, is described in the Bhagavatam. And the Vedavyasa is also living in the Himalayas. But you have to have, he doesn't reveal himself to everyone, every pilgrim who just comes. You have to be special, privileged to be, like he revealed himself to Madhvacharya. You have to have a special access to be able to see him. But he's here in the Himalayas right now, Srila Vyasadeva. So one can, if you surrender to Krishna, then the time of your death is completely under Krishna's hands. If he wants you to remain here on a mission, even within your present body, he can keep you for thousands of years. It's completely up to Krishna. But as long as you're within the material energy, as long as you're not surrendered to Krishna, it's strictly governed by the laws of karma. And there's nothing you can do to change it. When your time to come to die comes, that's it. You got to get out. The Yamadutas will come, say, okay, that's it. You're going right now. They grab you out of the body and take you to Yamaraj. So it's the intelligent thing to do is, I think I better surrender to Krishna. Because that puts me in a safe position. That I wanted to see the Yamadutas at the time of death. We were preaching to one lady, Mataji and myself. Actually, Mataji was preaching to her. She was mostly preaching to her, and this woman became a devotee. She was taking it, she was gradually becoming a devotee. She wasn't fully initiated yet or anything, but she was in the hospital. She had some problem, serious health problem, and they gave her an injection. She got an allergic reaction to this injection. And her tongue, as an allergic reaction, her tongue swelled up like a balloon and she was choking to death on her own tongue. She couldn't breathe. Her tongue was suffocating. Her own tongue was suffocating it. So Guru Mata was yelling into her ears, so she would think of Krishna at the time of death, yelling into her ears the holy names. And I ran out into the hallway and grabbed the nurses who came in, and they knew. They had the antidote injection to counteract the first one, and they gave it to her before she died, and she survived. But she actually told us how she'd seen the Yamadutas, even though she was practicing Krishna consciousness. She hadn't fully taken it up yet. She was starting to get into it, but she saw the Yamadutas. She hadn't been initiated. She hadn't fully surrendered yet. She was starting to take up the process, but yet she saw the Yamadutas. They were coming to take her. But by Krishna's grace, she got an extension. Because Guru Mata yelled Hare Krishna in her ears. Actually, she got an extension. Yeah?
How can one become a pure devotee in this
world? It's very simple. You do whatever your spiritual master says. So, you take your Guru's orders, your very life and soul. And by doing that, you become a pure devotee. Not difficult. Simply have to be the obedient servant of your Guru Maharaj. That's all. And immediately, you will make very rapid progress to pure bhakti. Any other questions? Yes.
What happens when happens to those who follow those bogus gurus under the direction of which they do pious activities and they lead some...
I heard the first half of the question. What happens to those who follow those bogus gurus? What's the second half?
Let her finish it. She's okay. Not finished.
Okay.
Some bogus, even if they are bogus gurus, some advise their followers to stop meat eating and do pious activities. But they are not surrendering to Krishna. What happens to the followers of those bogus gurus?
According to the Sri Upanishad, those who follow the bogus gurus, the bogus gurus go to the darkest places in the universe, and their followers go with them. In spite of their pious activities, because they're following a cheater and a rascal, they go to where he goes, to a dark corner of the universe, a very dark corner of the universe. So we have to save the people from these bogus gurus. It's a very serious thing. Very serious thing. Yeah.
Gurudev, you said Krishna's body is spiritual.
Hmm.
But I have heard that when Krishna left, he left the body. When he was
yes, here it is. This material world is Krishna's Virat Roop. He left behind his Virat Roop.
Okay. Well,
you're sitting on it right now, on Krishna's body that he left behind. Do you know that you're sitting on Krishna's body right now? The Virat Roop is the body he left behind. His original threefold bending form went back to play the flute for Radharani. Actually, nobody is killed by being shot in the foot by an arrow. Unless it's a poison arrow. But a regular arrow, plus one of our acharyas confirmed the arrow didn't even break his skin, it bounced off. Krishna was not actually wounded by the arrow. It hit his foot and it bounced off his foot. Nobody is killed by it when an arrow bounces off their foot. Nobody. Even if they're shot in the foot, as long as it's not a poison arrow, a regular arrow doesn't kill somebody. If it shoots, they get shot in the foot by an arrow, it doesn't kill them. What to speak of Krishna? So Krishna was not killed by the hunter. But he took the arrow bouncing off his foot as a cue that it's time to go back to the spiritual world now. That's so. And he descended into the past the heavenly planets through the covering the
ascended.
Ascended. That's what I mean to say. He ascended from that place in India. He just went back to the spiritual world. He wasn't killed, but he left behind. He did leave behind this material body, the Virat Roop. Here it is. Of course, Vrindavan is not. It is, but it isn't really. This is not different from Goloka Vrindavan here. Yeah. This is a little bit different. But Delhi, you can say he left behind Delhi. Well, of course, it wasn't Delhi then, but the material energy is Krishna's Virat Roop. He left it behind. He didn't leave a spiritual, any threefold bending form behind, no way. He took that back.
We hear that this Vrindavan is not different than the other one. But now this Vrindavan, just like the Atma is covered by ignorance, this Vrindavan is also getting covered, Krishna's pastime.
This is covered, yeah, very covered. Jamuna is so covered now, it's horrible. Oh my God.
It's becoming covered.
The Jamuna is getting more and more covered by pollution and abuse. It's just very sad. Jamuna used to be, we used to be very nice to bathe in Jamuna here in Vrindavan. Now I don't even want to get near it. It's become so filthy. I hate to even go near it. It begs my heart to go down and see it. It's just, they've so covered over by pollution, industries. Delhi is dumping huge amounts of toxic stuff into it. It's just, it's a very sad thing. Very, very sad. Yeah, it's just very sad. It breaks my heart to come to this place to see how much the Dham is being covered more and more and more and more and more. It's just very sad. It breaks my heart to come here. I just become heartbroken every time I come to see how much is being covered up in so many different ways. But still, it's still we can, it's a very special place, and so we love to come here. And in places like the Krishna Balaram Temple or here in the MPT, where you, the spiritual atmosphere is maintained, it's very nice. But you, we used to be able to hear peacocks here. I don't hear them anymore. Here in the MPT, we could hear the peacock. Ooh, 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 ooh. Can't hear them anymore. A few years ago, we could regularly hear the peacocks here.
Was it 30 years ago?
30? No, even less than that. In the last 10 years or so, we could hear peacock, but no more.
No,
too much development. Too much development. You could hear the peacocks around this area. But they just did, now that they don't come, it's just so developed. I don't know why they're not here anymore. But
now even in Gordon, you hear the loudspeakers instead of peacocks.
Yeah, the Kali Yuga is there. But even 30 years ago and 40 years ago, when the devotees first came, it was, even then Prabhupada said it was covered. So it is covered. But Prabhupada has uncovered it in many ways, and that brought a lot of development, which also covered it up. Commercial development, you know, all these apartments going up everywhere. When I first came here, there was across the street was just an empty field. It was an open field. There was nothing there, just an empty field. It was like off into the distance, just nothing but an empty field. As far as the eye could see, there's an empty field across the street from the temple.
Up to the road, up to the Mathura Road, it was all empty.
Yeah, all the way to the Mathura Road, it was just undeveloped. All places empty.
You can feel it, this Chatikara Road, you can feel that it is still happening. But now it's...
It's very much getting more and more and more and more covered. I can envision a day the whole thing's just a big city like Delhi, you know. There'd be nothing left.
Although these buildings are all built by builders, some devotees also buy flats. Should we buy or not?
Yeah.
Devotees?
Yeah.
Devotees have to come often to Vrindavan.
Yeah, the devotees, it's also become popular because the Prabhupada has popularized it so much. That, you know, pious Hindus like to get flats here. But, you know, they bring money and then it just keeps growing and growing and growing. I don't know where it's going to stop. The water, the Jamuna is so polluted, there's just more and more developments coming, more and more pollution, more sewage problems. It's somebody, the government actually, you know, they're not, if the devotees should be the government here, not the ISKCON should be the government here. And then things can be better managed. You see. They could really respect the Tirtha.
Now it's Mayavati's government.
Huh?
Now it's Mayavati's government here.
Yeah, the government
is...
Nitya's
government.
Yeah, Maya's government.
So any more questions? Yeah, now that's your turn.
So, Gurudev, will it keep on covering more and more with the passing years and decades? Or...
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What's that?
It's gonna come. Is Vrindavan gonna get more and more covered?
Well, yes, externally, but for you it can become more and more uncovered. Because as one advances in Krishna consciousness, then the name Krishna becomes more visible in his name, also in his dham. So, for the general public, yeah, more and more covered. By development, that's what's happening. It's every year, it's getting more and more covered by development. It's obvious. Anybody who's been coming here for, you know, can see it every year. It's more and more developed, more and more developed every year, and it keeps growing, happening constantly. Never doesn't stop. So that's a reality. And but for someone who's advancing in Krishna consciousness, he will become more and more aware of the. For him, it'll become more and more uncovered. So that way, you don't have to become morose. Just become more Krishna conscious. For you, the Dham will never become more and more uncovered in the course of time. But externally, unless devotees actually, the ISKCON devotees are given the power here to govern this Dham, it's going to happen. Just like in Mayapur, there's this, you know, we have the. Within the ISKCON property, it's managed what can be built, what remains open land, everything is governed by the ISKCON management. So unless ISKCON is actually managing this whole area, and it's allowed developers to come in and do whatever they want, you know, money talks. And it's the development will keep going. It won't stop. More and more buildings are coming up, more and more and more and more to keep growing. It just won't stop. That's a reality. Of course, there's some advantage of that. It means there's more preaching here. More people coming means more preaching. So there's advantages also. I mean, some things have been, in some ways it's improved, but in some ways it's been spoiled, both things. Madan Mahan Temple, they've greatly improved. They put a nice, it used to be a sewage area in the bottom, just sewage everywhere, horrible, stinky sewage. Now they've put a fence, they keep it very clean, they have a lawn in there. They've done a very nice job at Madan Mahan Temple to beautify the temple, the area around the temple. That's a real improvement. So in some ways there's improvement.
Yeah, the same sewage water that was collected there, now it goes to Jamuna.
Yeah, there really needs to be Krishna conscious government here. You know, the ISKCON devotee should actually become the government here by popular demand. Not by force, but by popular demand. I hope that day will come. It's not happening anytime soon, but I hope that day will come eventually. Okay, so our time is up. Thank you very much. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.
Jai.